This is Chris Slade, former University of Virginia defensive end, graduate of 1993, back on the staff at UVA. Excited to be back coaching my old stomping grounds. You're listening to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show.
Welcome to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show. I am Chris Graham, and it's a Friday. We're looking forward to a big ACC basketball weekend. We've got some baseball with baseball getting going today. The Virginia baseball team in action. And Jerry's joining me on the long Zoom line from Atlanta. I would say Hotlanta, but Jerry, I understand it's not hot down there where you are right now.
Nope, not at all.
I was hopeful to hear that it was. It's chilly here in Virginia too, so I don't want to share misery. I wanted to hear something good going on. The weather next week looks like it's going to be good. You know, Jerry, when I drove to the parking lot for the most recent home basketball game, there were people tailgating. And I looked ahead of the forecast for next Wednesday. It's supposed to be in the mid to upper 60s in Charlottesville and might be tailgating weather for basketball again. That's something to look forward to, I guess.
Yeah, that would be nice for a change. It's been a while, that's for sure.
Yeah. Baseball's supposed to open at home as well on Tuesday. Weather could be good there as well. Temperatures at least are good. We'll see if it rains or not. So let's talk basketball to start. Virginia with the loss on Big Monday at Virginia Tech, the margin for error narrows for the Hoos. Virginia now at 16-10 overall, 10-6 in the ACC. Interestingly, with other action this week in the ACC, Virginia is still very much in the running for one of those four double byes in the ACC tournament. But from an NCAA tournament perspective, tomorrow's game at Miami is huge. A quad one opportunity for Virginia, a team that they beat in Charlottesville a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, it's close to, if you've ever been close to a must win, this is it.
Yeah, for sure, Chris. Virginia's currently tied for fifth in the league standings, even though they've lost that game, like you mentioned, on Big Monday to the Hokies. And Miami's in third place with a 19-7 overall record, 11-4 in the ACC. With Virginia winning that first meeting, 71-58, a sweep would be, like you said, pretty monumental for this team going forward. If they could somehow find a way to knock off Miami and Duke back-to-back like they did a couple weeks ago, you would think they'd be in pretty good shape down the home stretch with Florida State at home and Louisville on the road, and then maybe do a little damage up in Brooklyn. But the first things first, you got to take care of Miami on the road. And you know, Virginia has a 5-game winning streak over the Hurricanes, which is kind of surprising, as decent as Miami has been at home over the last couple of years, but even though they've been banged up a lot. But Virginia's won the last two at Miami. So if they can extend that streak, at least they'll have an opportunity to do something.
Yeah, you'd think a team that could beat Duke and Miami back-to-back, I should say Miami and Duke, that's just the way the schedule works out. Miami-Duke the first time through, Miami-Duke second time through. One time through would be a team that you could think is worthy of a tournament bid, but if they could do it twice, certainly. Hey, you mentioned, Jerry, I want to throw this in as we were breaking down UVA-Miami. You mentioned the ACC tournament in Brooklyn. We'll have a caravan heading up to Brooklyn. Yourself, me, and our colleague Scott German will be this will be dangerous. We'll be heading up 81, hitting 76 in Pennsylvania, heading up our way up to New York City for the ACC tournament. I wish we could just tape record the whole conversation we'll have for that 6 hours or so. That would be a podcast worthy kind of drive there and back. But we'll be making our way up there. So fans, for JerryRatcliffe.com, for AugustaFreePress.com, we will be there on the scene to bring you all the action as Virginia plays in that tournament. Hopefully making their way, from a Virginia fan standpoint, certainly making their way towards an NCAA tournament bid. So, Jerry, from your thoughts about that game back on February 5th, Virginia winning 71-58, as you mentioned, what were the takeaways from that game? Virginia really dominated Miami. The one thing about Miami, I would, as a takeaway, they're a really good 3-point shooting team, but that day they were not, 4 of 17 from three. But what were the takeaways from that Virginia will look to build on tomorrow?
Yeah, I was surprised that Virginia won the game. I won't say easily, because usually most games are not easy regardless of the score. But I guess what I came away with that was Jim Larrañaga's frustration that it seemed like that everything he did or tried to do, that Tony Bennett was one step ahead of him or made a quick correction to adjust. And it was almost like Larrañaga couldn't believe that nothing he tried worked, because Tony would throw up a quick roadblock and just negate whatever adjustment he made. So, that's hard to do to a veteran coach that's been around as long as Larrañaga, because they know all the tricks. They know if this happens, you counter with that. But everything that he tried just had no impact really on the game, because Tony would just shut it down, whatever it was. That and the fact that, and I don't know how much of it was Virginia's defense, because they did play a little bit better defense in that game and got out on the shooters a little bit. But the fact that they shut Miami down from three-point range was somewhat of a surprise as well.
And then Virginia on its offensive end shot 60% from the field, 8 of 15, 53.3% from three. Armaan Franklin, who's not had a good stretch lately, but in that one he had 22 points, 8 of 16 from the field. Virginia on offense was as good as I've seen a Virginia team. This might be hyperbole, but last year's teams were pretty good. That performance, though, might remind you a little bit of 2019, the way Virginia was shooting the ball that night.
Yeah, that was kind of mind-blowing and totally unexpected, particularly from three-point range, where they've struggled all year. And I don't think Larrañaga was mentally prepared to see that kind of thing happen to, because they played pretty decent defense too in Miami. So I think it was a shock to everyone, probably even to Tony. Coming into that game, I think we had talked on this podcast that how cool would it be just to see how good Virginia could be if everybody was on the same page and clicking on the same night. And we saw a lot of that in that game against Miami, because everybody seemed to put it together, and we started to see more of the evidence that even though this team started out as an outside-in team, it has converted to an inside-out team. And I think that's one of the big reasons they've been better down the stretch, because we saw it at Tech the other night when Gardner and those guys they weren't as effective in the middle when the three-point shot wasn't falling. Virginia was 0 for 9 from behind the arc, and when the Tech defenders don't have to respect your three-point shot, they can gang up and take away your strength down inside, and that's exactly what we saw.
UVA Orthopedics and Sports Medicine boasts one of the finest teams of doctors in the country, and they're right here in Charlottesville to not only provide care for the University of Virginia athletic teams, but also the Charlottesville and Central Virginia communities. UVA Orthopedics has been a proud sponsor of the Jerry Ratcliffe Show for the past 2 years, with numerous team members featured in weekly segments where doctors share great insight into various sports injuries, what causes them, how to treat them, and recovery time. Their team of experts are there for you and offer the best care to solve your health problems and get you back on your feet. Let their team of specialists get you back in the game.
Hey, this is Thomas Q. Jones, former UVA All-American running back, and you're listening to the Jerry Ratcliffe Show. Wahoo wah.
Yeah, if you can't spread the floor, Tech definitely was cutting off the lanes, the driving lanes and the passing lanes that Virginia's been exploiting so well lately. K.A. Clark really struggled Monday night. He had 2 points, 1 of 9 shooting. He had some turnover issues. He had some foul issues. And he had some confidence issues, it looked like. I mean, I know that after the game, Virginia Tech coach Mike Young said, nah, there's no way that kid was rattled. But Tony Bennett kind of, without saying it, you know, said, you know, he was referencing the air ball chance that Kihei got. Early one of his misses was an air ball early in the game, and every time he got the ball afterwards, he was serenaded with the air ball chant. There was one sequence in the second half. He got the ball, and I think 7 seconds into a shot clock, kind of put up a wild shot that got blocked. you know, Virginia's got to have Kea Clark playing well to have a chance, no matter who the opponent is, but especially someone good like Miami at home.
Yeah, I have to agree with you and Tony. I thought at first I didn't think that he was rattled, but as the game continued on and the air ball chance continued on, I think he did get rattled. I don't think he's used to, even though he's a senior and he's been in really tough environments, like at Duke and at Purdue, and then in that regional when in the Elite Eight when he that was an incredible atmosphere, mostly Purdue, and he never got rattled in any of those games. But I think the other night when he was singled out from early on, and the Tech students never let up on him the rest of the game, I think it did bother him. I think it got into his head. And I, as much as I like Mike Young, I have to disagree with his analysis there. I think Kihei just wasn't himself. He seemed reluctant to shoot. And when he did shoot, he didn't seem to shoot with confidence. He just seemed to be completely out of sync. And he can't allow for that to happen because they depend on him for so much. And if he's just a little bit off, it impacts the whole team.
Jaden Gardner has really come of his own lately. He had a couple of games rough stretch. It was around Virginia Tech, the first Virginia Tech game, the win at home back in early to mid-January. He was 3 of 14 in the Wake game. I think he was 2 of 9 in that Tech game. But his last six, I've got him for 18.8 points a game. He's shooting just under 50%. And it seems like Virginia finally knows how to use him. You know, they're getting him those face-ups in the mid-range. He's making those shots. And when he makes those shots, then it draws the defender out. He's getting to the rim some, getting fouled some. Gardner has just been – I mean, during this stretch where Virginia's been really good, he's been really, really good for the Wahoos.
Yeah, I agree. He's and he's been good around the rim too, getting stick backs and offensive rebounds to pass back out. But and like you said, drawing fouls. He's been to the line a lot, it seems, in the past couple of weeks. He's becoming the guy that we thought he was going to be all along. And he started off that way, then kind of had some ups and downs, but he's been pretty consistent the last few weeks. And they need that because he's, I tell you, that guy's a competitor. And he has so much versatility. I love the fact that he can hit those mid-range jumpers 12 to 17 feet. It seems like it's almost automatic. And it's almost a lost art in modern basketball. You love to see it. That's what you and I grew up on, yeah, really.
Right. That's right.
And most of our listeners out there probably as well. So it's great to see a guy that can bring that to the table. And I think the fact that he and even Franklin has a good mid-ranger, when they are hitting those shots, they really don't need to hit the three that well. So it would be nice if maybe even another guy could develop a little bit more of a mid-range game. It might help them instead of having to force shots that they're probably not going to make.
Yeah, I wish that Gardner's success as a mid-range guy could rub off more on Franklin. You mentioned he is so good in the mid-range, and I'm looking up his numbers now. His field goal percentage on two-point jumpers is 50.5%. So his mid-range game is solid. He's only 25% from three. His last three games, he's 1 of 14 from three, and he's been shooting a lot more threes lately. It's kind of like he's settling again. For a while there, early in the season, he was settling for threes. There was a time, you know, maybe late December, into January, he said, hey, I got to start taking it a little bit more to the basket. He started doing so, getting to the rim, getting to the, you know, those 12 to 15 foot jumpers, making a lot of those jumpers. Now he's settling again, and he's only averaging 8.3 in his last three since that Miami game, averaging just 8.3 points a game. Virginia, now he stays on the floor because he's so good defensively, so athletic, so good defensively. But Virginia really needs not necessarily the 22-point Armon Franklin like we had in the Miami win, but you need that guy who can score 12 to 15 for you and do so very efficiently.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of frustrating to watch them just sit out there and jack up threes and especially when they're not going in early and it looks like it's going to be a bad night from the arc. And they just keep insisting upon forcing up threes. And I know that's a big temptation because you can turn a game around if you hit a couple in a row, but they've struggled to do that. And every game's not going to be like Miami, unfortunately, for these guys. They're one of the streakiest teams in the nation. I was talking to an analyst earlier this morning on Twitter. He has he charts runs and for and against teams, and Virginia has been one of the streakiest teams in the country all season long, and it doesn't look like that's going to change, which is kind of surprising considering their pace of play, but still, they go on runs, they give up runs, and not that other teams don't, but they're one of the streakiest in the country on both sides of that ledger. And I guess that just speaks to some of the inconsistency that's costing games throughout the season, that why they haven't been able to, up until recently, put together back-to-back wins up until a couple of weeks, last week when they won a few in a row and looked pretty darn good doing it.
Yeah, when they're good, they're very good. They beat Providence by 18. Providence is going to be a top three seed, a two or a three, maybe a four seed at the worst in the tournament coming up. Beat Duke, you beat a Miami team. You've got some good wins, but they can also be on the other side of things as far as that goes too. 5 o'clock tip tomorrow for UVA and Miami, and Jerry will be tweeting during the game. I'll be blogging and tweeting during the game. And of course, after the game, go to jerryratcliffe.com, augustafreepress.com for much more than you'll ever want to know about the UVA and Miami basketball game as far as that goes.
Looking for a great dining experience in Charlottesville? Look no further than the Aberdeen Barn. The Barn has been family-owned and operated since 1965, with Terry and Angela providing great atmosphere and mouth-watering food at Virginia's big-time steakhouse. Enjoy the fine dining or relax in the Sportsman's Bar, a fantastic place to wind down and socialize, surrounded by flat-screen televisions tuned to the latest sporting events. You never know who you might bump into at the Aberdeen Barn, where all the greatest Cavaliers have dined over the decades and keep coming back for the delicious menu and good times. Check it out online at aberdeenbarn.com or call 434-296-4630.
Hey, Jerry, let's work in real quick here. Let's talk some UVA baseball. Virginia opening the season today. It seems for fans who are thinking it's February, it's cold, even in Atlanta, what are they doing playing baseball? It is baseball. College baseball starts in February. Virginia opening with a 1-0 win over Bellarmine. 6 hits for Virginia. They got an RBI double in the second inning from Jake Geloff. It's all they needed. Good pitching. Only 2 hits allowed by the rotation guy. Let's see. The starter was lefty Brandon Neek in his first start. He's the Friday night guy for now. Got a save from Matt Wyatt. Virginia, in addition to the game, maybe some news here to talk about too. Brian O'Connor is going with an all lefty weekend rotation, at least here at the outset. That could be an advantage for Virginia. Most teams don't, have the ability to counter good lefties like that. And Virginia's going to bring 3 of them at you in a row.
Yeah, it was good to see Nick get off to a good start today. I think Brian said the other day that he probably wasn't going to let any of them go more than 5 innings early.
Right.
And I think Nick went 4 1/3 or something today and did a decent job. And then we'll always remember him from last year's NCAA tournament when he came off the bench in relief and struck out 16 Old Dominion batters. So it's one of the most incredible performances I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And then you got Nate Savino starting tomorrow. And then he was a return guy from last year. And then Brian Gursky, a transfer from Southern Cal, who I think he appeared in like 15 games or something for the Trojans, is the other southpaw. And it's going to be interesting to see if he sticks with them throughout the season as his starting rotation. I guess a lot of it will depend on performance and how other guys maybe do in practice. But he said, at least for now, that's the way he's going to go. And it looks like he has a lot of options. They had three or four junior college, either junior college or college transfers onto this staff, pitching staff, and some guys back from last year and some new faces as well. So it looks like he's going to have a lot of options as we go forward.
Yeah, Wyatt today, our friend and colleague Damon Dillman, I think, traveled with the team. I was reading him on Twitter during the game. He said Wyatt hit 96 on the gun a couple times. We saw that last year in the postseason up to the College World Series. Wyatt really came into his own there. He pitched a 1-2-3 perfect ninth. This was after Brian O'Connor insisted that I'm not sure I'm going with Wyatt as my closer. There's a lot of guys who can close. It's a 1-0 game in the ninth inning, and guess who he goes to? So he goes to Wyatt. Wyatt closes the door and finishes out the win. Virginia will play tomorrow at 3:00. Gardner Webb, you mentioned Nate Savino will get the start. Savino's a guy that, when he was coming out of high school, was getting a lot of looks by MLB teams as a possible top draft pick. And now in his third year at UVA, of course, the 1 year was lost to COVID. He's a guy that you still see on high on draft boards for a lot of major league organizations. And so, he'll probably go 4 or 5. Virginia is very smart. Brian knows you can't win the College World Series in February. So go out there, get him some work, get your bullpen guys, your middle relief guys some work, get your into the bullpen guys some work. Brian insists, he really went into detail in his talk with reporters the other day. He said, look, what we're trying to do is figure out where these guys fit in. It may not look, mid-April, what it looks like now in terms of who your starters are, who your middle relief guys are, who your closer, your eighth and ninth inning guys are. But your goal isn't to be where you need to be now. The goal is where you need to be by the, midpoint of the season and then start hitting a run. So he's got a track record. He's got 5 College World Series appearances, 1 national title. He kind of knows how to do this, but it is interesting to see. And, of course, the lineup today producing just the 1 run, but it's early in the season. Pitchers are usually ahead of hitters early in the season. It's cold outside. They're north of you, Jerry. So if it's cold in Atlanta, it's cold in North Carolina too. And they got enough done to get the win. And Virginia fans can look forward to a couple more games this weekend. Unfortunately, no broadcast, no TV broadcast, not even internet broadcast, just on the radio. But then the Hoos open at home on Tuesday with VMI, the traditional of late home opener opponent. That's on Tuesday afternoon. So it's baseball season, man. I tell you what, that means it's going to start getting warmer. It might not be warm now, Jerry, but baseball season means it's starting to get that way.
We can only hope so. It was cool to see Geloff kind of pick up where he left off last year. What a great season he had a year ago, and filling in there at third base where his brother played on the hot corner and with a hot bat still. And it's going to be interesting, I think, to see Kyle Teal behind the plate for these guys. Supposedly he's a great catcher. He doesn't seem built like a catcher to me.
No, he doesn't to me either.
But, we're thinking more like Ortiz or some of those bigger bodies. But, I'm sure that he's going to do a great job back there. But it'll be fun to watch him break in behind the plate.
He's got a cannon of an arm, and they stuck him in right field last year because that's where they put him, just because that's where there was somewhere to get some at-bats. I remember in one of the postseason games, he threw out somebody from right field all the way to third base, and it was on a line. I mean, so home plate to second base is nothing.
Absolutely. That's just a little flick of the wrist.
He had a hit today. He was 1-for-4. The starting shortstop, a true freshman, true first-year, Griff O'Farrell, had a single in 4 at-bats. Devin Ortiz, you mentioned, who Brian O'Connor said will also – he's going to get some time out of the bullpen this week, and he started first base today, had a hit. Chris Newell in center field was 1-for-3. Geloff was 1-for-2, also had a couple of walks. And right fielder Drew Hamrock actually had a double. I think that was a late-inning double that got a rally going that unfortunately got snuffed out, but – 6 hits for the Hoos, got some guys, got some bats heated up there a little bit, and we'll hope to see the offense get picked up a little bit more as the weekend goes on.
Yeah, for sure. Off to a great start, and I'm sure they'd like to be undefeated when they get back home and open up against VMI on Tuesday. We'll see how that goes, but I guess we need to give a shout out too to the UVA women's and men's swimming teams, particularly the women. They're breaking records every time they get in the pool, and we're definitely going to have a couple of those on our some of our future podcasts. But I've just been amazed, like two or three nights in a row, somebody's broken a UVA record, an ACC record, a pool record, or an American record. Some of the fastest times ever swam in the history of the sport. I mean, it's mind blowing, really, the talent that they've collected over there.
Yeah, it is. It is. We saw that in the Olympics, the Summer Olympics this past summer in Japan, with some gold medals coming home for the ladies, particularly, as you mentioned. And they do us. They represent us very well as far as that goes. Also, maybe a shout out. He didn't play in the game. He you know, Bryce Perkins, though, a member of the Super Bowl champion Los Angeles Rams, third string quarterback, the former record setting Wahoo quarterback from a couple of years ago, is doing well in the NFL, and we'll see if he gets a more of a look in the next couple of years. But he'll have a Super Bowl ring for his collection in any case, with the Rams win this past Sunday in Super Bowl, what was it, 56?
56.
Yeah. Jerry, I'm trying to think. My first Super Bowl that I remember, I was probably 6 or 7 years old in 1978-79, when the Steelers were making their big run. So that was probably still in the closest single digits, and I can't believe we're that far along now that we're at 56. That just blows my mind when I think about it.
Well, this will date me, but I have seen every Super Bowl that's ever been played.
Oh yeah.
I was a football fan as a kid growing up, and I still remember Vince Lombardi and how that great game they played with Kansas City. Lombardi really didn't like the AFL very much in those days, and he really wanted to rub it in after those first two Super Bowls against Kansas City and Oakland. And he didn't mind pouring salt in the wound a little bit, because he felt like that the AFL was inferior to the NFL, and certainly his Packers were something to deal with. So, but yeah, unfortunately I've had the pleasure of covering 10 or 11, 12 of them, back in when the Redskins were actually good, for those people who probably some people out there that can't remember when that was, but it was
weren't alive when that was, Jerry.
it was when Joe Gibbs was there for the first time, and had a really good, way a blueprint on how to win, and they were dominant, and they had guys like Joe Theismann and the Hogs on the offensive line, and Riggins, yeah. Rigo the fullback, and Art Monk, and so many of those guys. I guess Ricky Clark,
the fun bunch.
The fun bunch. I'd forgotten that. So. I went with them to a couple of Super Bowls. And then after that, it's just some other teams, just because it was fun covering. But my last Super Bowl was in 2000 or 2001, when the Rams and Titans played, and the game ended on the half-inch line, I think, down in Atlanta.
Yeah. Kevin Dyson was tackled as he was trying to get to stretch the ball in the end zone. He's stretching the ball out there, as I remember that play.
That's right.
Yeah, you talked about those Redskins fans who don't remember. The Redskins' last Super Bowl win was 1992. This dates both of us. I was in college at UVA 30 years ago. Come on now. There are kids who were born, went to college, went to graduate school, probably got their medical degree, and they're like, really? Seriously? Washington won a Super Bowl?
It's hard to imagine the futility that their fans have gone through over the years since then, but I read an interesting stat the other day, and I can't remember it off the top of my head, but it was mind-boggling how many head coaches they've had, how many quarterbacks they've had during that span of time. It can't be another team in the history of football with more changes at those two spots than the Redskins over the last, like you said, 30 years or so.
The 80s and early 90s, though, with Joe, he won three Super Bowls with three different quarterbacks. That's an amazing stat. You know, he didn't latch on to one guy like Belichick did and, you know, have a great successful thing. He had to win with backups. He had to win with guys that nobody else wanted. And you know, John Riggins had retired before he came back and played for Washington and ran them to one of those Super Bowl wins. But yeah, the '80s and nineties when Washington was playing good football, man, when their skins were playing great football, those were some fun times. It was fun to, for me, I was in school still. I was in like elementary school, then in middle school and high school. You know, everybody was happy, you know, on Monday mornings, it seemed like, and not like now when nobody even wants to admit they're a fan of the Washington football team. And now the Commanders are just getting used to that name. And now you can call them the Commies if you want. I mean, it's just, it has degenerated into such a long running bad joke that it's so unfortunate that something that was such an important part of the fabric of our sports culture here in this region has been ripped away from us. And we'll probably never get it back, Jerry.
Probably not. That's awfully hard to dominate in today's game as it is. I think the best thing that could ever happen to that club is if Dan Snyder sells it to someone else and see if they can move things forward.
Yeah.
But speaking of your Washington teams, another shout out we have to make is to your guy, man. I know you're a huge Nationals fan.
Yes.
Ryan Zimmerman officially announced he's retiring. Or has retired, and
yes.
What an incredible Hall of Fame career that that guy's had. And to me, he will always be known as Mr. National.
And Brian O'Connor pointed it out. He was asked about it this week when he was talking about his team coming up for this year, his team at UVA. He said, you know, the fact that Ryan played in the major leagues 88 days after his last game at Davenport Field. And you think about that. He played at Davenport, was drafted in 2005. He was the first year that Washington was the Nationals were in Washington. They had just moved from Montreal, changed their name from the Expos. He was the first draft pick ever in Washington Nationals history, taken in the first round, top of the first round. I think it was the fourth or fifth pick. He tore up Double-A. And he got called up in September. They were going to give him a few at bats as a look see and take him to spring training the next year and see what would happen. He hit 390 in his September call up and never went back to the minor leagues. And he holds every Washington offensive record that you can imagine: home runs, RBIs, runs scored, you know, everything else. I had to shed a tear a little bit when I found a YouTube video of his 11 career walk-off homers, which when he was still active, led all active players in the majors, 11 walk-off homers.
Wow.
I was there in 2019 for, he had a big home run in the NLDS. I was there at Nats Park when he had that home run that helped win a game against LA, kept him in the series. He eventually beat the favorite Dodgers. He had a homer in his first at bat of the World Series, very appropriately, after all
yes.
those years of toil. His first 6 years, they lost 90 games all six of those years. They were last place in the NL East five of those 6 years. And he, you know, Danny Neckel had this, I think it was Jerry, one of our Twitter friends. He pointed this out. You know, he was starting a sort of a Twitter discussion about a guy who starred in college and then in his sport played for the closest regional team and never played anywhere else. He's never going to be anything but a Cavalier and a National. And you can't, there's no one else that fits that bill. He didn't go out and vagabond around the major leagues looking for a title. He wanted in Washington. What a special career and what a special guy.
Yeah. A first class guy, a great family man, gives back to communities and with his charities and all his work. Every time I've ever been around the guy, I know for a while there before the season would start each year and then maybe during the season, just for the Virginia Writers, the Nationals would have a teleconference with Ryan, with us, just the Virginia Writers, which was cool. And he was always so gracious, and anytime I didn't cover a lot of Nationals games, but when I did, I always made a point to go by his locker. And just what a gracious and first-class guy he is. A real credit to the Nationals and UVA.
He raises a lot of money. His Zims Foundation, his mother, I'm trying to think of the ailment she suffers from. I'm looking it up. Multiple sclerosis.
I thought it was MS. Yeah.
He raises so much. He's raised millions of dollars for multiple sclerosis research. Brian O'Connor mentioned that all the work he's done for UVA Medical Center over the years, raising money for them as well. His Zims Foundation has spent a lot of time and effort in raising money for research, to help people like his mother deal with that issue. And of course, he's been a big donor, big help to UVA baseball over the years. He several alums who's done that. And I'll say this for me, I was very fortunate. As it turns out, I was there for his last home game. He started. He had a couple of hits in the loss to. Who were they playing? The Red Sox. Red Sox actually won that game, came back in the ninth and won that game to make the playoffs. But Zimmerman started, and then very classy move, Davey Martinez sent him out to first base in the eighth inning and then sent out someone to take his place, and the crowd gave – I mean, it was a full house and a five-minute standing ovation for Zim. We all thought that might be his last appearance. It turns out it was, and I'm very fortunate to have been there for his last hurrah as a national. Great guy, great Wahoo, great national, and sad to see him go, but he's got a lot to still give the world in lots of different ways.
Oh, absolutely, and hopefully he won't be a stranger around Charlottesville either, because he has a gazillion fans in Charlottesville for sure.
He's one of those guys. I mean, when you're a UVA alum and a UVA fan and have been around this program for all the years, like you and I've been, Jerry, you're proud of guys like Zimmerman, you're like Malcolm Brogdon, Chris Long, who not only, you know, make millions on the field, but they give millions back to great causes and represent us well in that respect. And so, yep. Hey, Zim, thanks from a Nats fan. And Jerry, I'm glad you brought that up. I can't believe I almost forgot that. I'm sitting here literally surrounded by Nats memorabilia all around me podcast room. And almost forgot Zim. So that would have been a huge omission on my part.
No problem. I'm glad we were able to get that in.
Yes. Well, again, tomorrow, Virginia, Miami, 5:00 tip. Follow Jerry on Twitter, follow me on Twitter and on my blog, and then after the game, we'll have it all broken down for you. And also, in between now and then, we've got previews as well. So look at our sites to get the latest as we get ready for that game. For Jerry Ratcliffe, I'm Chris Graham signing off. Everyone have a great weekend.